start off, let's just talk for a few minutes. When you think of the Proverbs, what's the first thing that pops into your mind when you think of Proverbs? Just whatever pops in your mind, shout it out. Okay, that's probably the first thing that is going to be connected with the Proverbs, because this is what would be considered in ancient Near Eastern literature, wisdom literature. And this is not just with the Israelites or with biblical literature. Hey, Grammy, you're here. How you feeling?
I'm doing okay.
You're okay. All right. This is not just with biblical literature. You're going to see that there's wisdom literature in other ancient Near Eastern literature as well, and we'll look at that. So wisdom. How do you define wisdom? And we're going to talk about how do you define a proverb, but how do you define wisdom? Because applying knowledge, Wayne?
Well, are we speaking generally or are we speaking biblically?
Go ahead and give me both. Okay, learning about God. I was going to write something down you just said, but I don't have a board. We're gonna take that for a moment. What's really interesting that we're going to see tonight is when we think of wisdom, Wayne just did what we normally do in our culture today. We separated secular from that which we would call religious or God-oriented. What is really interesting about all ancient Near Eastern literature is all wisdom literature was attributed to come from God or the gods. There was actually no such thing as secular wisdom literature as far as how it was published. Everything that we see was attributed either to God or the gods. So good. How else do you define wisdom? Kevin?
My favorite definition I still can't.
Thank you, Steve. You beat me to it. All right, if you didn't hear that, Andy Cantrell has forever changed the way that I look at wisdom, and he defined it a long time ago. This would have been 7 years ago when I first heard this, but he said wisdom is to see the end of a thing. What he means by that is if you're able to look down the road and understand where this action is going to take you, you are then going to act accordingly by knowing what your action is going to do and where it's going to take you. So seeing the end of a thing, good. All right, well, how do you define a proverb after Lonnie? Go ahead.
Okay. Good.
Life
experiences.
Okay. Okay, good. So it's going to come from experience. It's going to come from observation and not just your own observations. Yeah, Joyce.
The opposite of that, a fool says that there is no God.
Okay. Yeah, and so there's an opposite to wisdom. So maybe in understanding what wisdom is, you have to understand what a fool is. Okay, go ahead.
Like I say, and we can also be constantly learning and never ever come to the knowledge and the wisdom that God wants us to. In 2 Timothy, we're told that there are people that are always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth.
Okay, good,
so
good.
We can learn a lot, but not.
We are setting some real big foundational things. Proverbs is going to be foundational for a lot of our understanding of wisdom and knowledge in the New Testament here, and then in John, and then in the back. So,
the ability to discern and know the outcome.
Okay, perfect. John.
This is funny. Behavioralism is the study of psychological study of men's interactions through experience. It has nothing to do with mental exercise or mental acknowledgement. It only comes through practical experience. It's a psychological science within itself. Just look that up today. And in contrast to what you just referred to a little bit ago, Joyce talked about the wisdom of God. Wisdom of God comes through, seems to be more mental exercise, understanding that He can give it if we lack it. He says, pray for it.
That's right. Out of James.
So that's the contrast. And sometimes, do we get it when we talk about wisdom of God?
Good. Good. In the back.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's good. Okay, so the idea of the Spirit being being Spirit-led and the wisdom that comes from the Spirit. Good. All right, Blake, and then we're going to...
I think this is maybe in Proverbs 1, but the beginning of wisdom is fearing God.
All right.
Which I think ties in with, you know, maybe what your dad was saying, that, you know, people are learning all the time and not coming to a knowledge of the truth, and it's probably because they don't have a foundation of thinking that all truth comes from God.
That's right. That's what we are going to expound on today as we develop the themes and the purpose of Proverbs. And everyone just know this, and I don't know what Jack's going to teach, but this is solid, and Jack would agree with it. The theme of Proverbs is the fear of the Lord. And the theme of all wisdom literature, when you look at Job, when you look at Ecclesiastes, when you look at the Psalms, you're going to see the same theme run throughout all wisdom literature. And what Blake was alluding to is chapter 1, verse 7, bookends with chapter 9, verse 10. Chapter 1, verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But chapter 9, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Good. Now, how do you define a proverb? We've got wisdom jumping around here. What's a proverb is going to be a part of wisdom. How do you define a proverb? What is a proverb? It's not a word you use today, right? You don't take a proverb class at school. You take poetry or whatever. Go ahead. Okay, it's a wise saying. Really, there's not one English word that can define a proverb for us. Ironically, this title actually came from Jerome when he gave this title to the book in the Latin Vulgate, and we've kept that title in our Bible since. So we call this Proverbs a very good description of the book. I think it's a good title. But Proverbs is poetry, but it's a more specific kind of poetry. Where poetry is more general, Proverbs is going to concentrate on elements of truth, truthful sayings, or thematic sayings that are going to establish some kind of a general truth. And we've got to put that up front. Are Proverbs true 100% of the time? Everyone say no. Okay, go ahead. Now, we need to think about that because there are going to be times, though, where someone will say, but this is from God's Word, so therefore this has to be true every single time. But go ahead and look at, go ahead and open up Proverbs chapter 12. Look at verse 21. Proverbs 12, 21. No ill befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. Now, has there ever been a time where the righteous, where ill has happened to righteous people?
Because they were righteous.
Because they're righteous. Now, has there ever been a time where it seemed that the wicked prospered? Okay. So when we talk about Proverbs, we are talking about general truth statements. They are not the exception. They are the general truth that comes from God, the general understanding of the way things work in life. And we need to understand it within the framework of fearing God. But that being said, here's all the different ways that Strong's and some different folks will try to bring a definition into English to help us understand what a proverb is. So you have something like a folk saying. And you'll see that in 1 Samuel 10 and in Ezekiel 18, verse 2, where you'll see a certain type of a folk saying, but it says, tell them this proverb, and then it's some kind of a folk saying. Sometimes a proverb can be an allegory. And in Ezekiel chapter 17, the Lord says to Ezekiel, tell them this proverb, and then it is an allegorical statement, some type of an illustration to paint a picture for Israel. Sometimes a proverb is just a byword, or it could even at times be a taunt against someone else. You know, here's a proverb that turned out to be a taunt against Saul. It was a song, but it's also a proverb. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000. That's a form of a proverb. And so the word in the Hebrew is mashal, And that's really literally what it means. It's all these different things all summed into one. It's a byword. It's a simile. It's some kind of a discourse. Proverbs have this big range of motion where all these different things can fall into the category of a proverb. And so here's some of those things. In the Proverbs themselves, you're going to see the use of simile. You're going to see the use of metaphor. You're going to see the use of allegory like you did in Ezekiel 17. You're going to see synecdoche. I can say big words. Woo! Which is where the part is made for a whole. Or a monotony, where part represents the whole. Or personification. You'll see that not just in chapter 9. You'll see that in chapter 1 where it says, wisdom cries out into the streets. It takes a concept of wisdom and it makes it like a human. You know, we do that all the time when you look at literature, especially for children, where the son is made to be like a person and it takes a walk or something or a dog. And so personification is where you're giving unhuman things human characteristics. You see that a lot in the Proverbs. And then aspect of irony. And when we say irony, irony is the same meaning in the Hebrew as lex talionis. And what that was it was the law of the tooth. And you guys remember that? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And so the way that you can make that into English, for our understanding, is the phrase, what comes around goes around. That's the idea of irony. So you'll see the fool who scoffs at God in chapter 1 and scorns him, but then when calamity strikes, turns, and what does he do? He calls for God, but it's too late. That is the use of irony in the Hebrew. It's what comes around, goes around, this idea of lex talionis. So all of these different things are all considered part of Proverbs. And even to make it more complicated, the Proverbs are going to be separated, and we're going to see that in the outline. Chapters 1 through 9 are contextual. It's Solomon writing to his children, and there's a definite flowing thought throughout the chapters. Verse 1 is connected to verse 2, verse 2 is connected to verse 3, just like any other letter. But then you get to chapter 10, and from then on, you'll have two verses that might talk about money, and then the next two verses will talk about fleeing away from an adulterous woman. And then the next two verses will talk about listening to your parents. And so it's kind of like a shotgun method. Proverbs are not as much contextual. This book is not really contextual. Mike Wilson just recently put out a book about the Proverbs. And it took him a lot longer than he expected because to try to organize them thematically, you've got to read through all of the chapters, 31 chapters, and try to take everything about money, and it'll be a verse here, and a verse here, and a verse here, and a verse here, and then compile it all into one section. So what you'll see sometimes, though, even though they are not contextually oriented for most of the Proverbs, you'll see sometimes, for fun, Solomon, how they organize these, is you'll see several in a row that are about a fool, or that are about work. And so there'll be a common word that strings several proverbs together that are all separate from each other, but surrounding the same word or the same character. And you see that sometimes. So I have the example up here in 26. You'll see for the verse 12 verses, the key word there is dealing with a fool and all of the actions of a fool. They're different, but they're all brought together because of this one individual. And then the next few verses in 13 through 16, similar to the fool, the idea is going to be about the sluggard. And what's a sluggard? Yeah, the lazy guy, the slothful man, the one who doesn't go to the ant, as you'll see early on in the Proverbs. Again, we've already talked about these. These are general rules and truths. This is not a hard, fast rule, but it's the way that things are generally going to play out in life, especially through the lens of understanding the fear of the Lord. Now, Proverbs in and of themselves, these are not just a part of the book of Proverbs. You see Proverbs scattered throughout the Bible. You can go back to Judges. You'll see Proverbs in Judges. You'll see them in 1 Samuel and 1 Kings. Even in the book of Psalms, there are Proverbs. Jeremiah, Ezekiel 16. Who knows this one in Ezekiel? The children's teeth are set on edge. Why? Because their parents gave them sour grapes. Okay, that's a proverb, and that's used to be of illustration and teaching to Israel. And then, of course, Jesus speaks several times, not just in parables, but also he tells them proverbs as well. Proverb is simply a form of wisdom literature. Wisdom literature is so much broader than just thinking of proverbs. What's included in wisdom literature? What different books, when you put the books of wisdom together, as we sing the song, books of Moses, or books of poetry, so to speak? Yeah, Job. Why would Job be wisdom literature? Okay, having a conversation with God. But the Jews wrote differently. There were so many different ways to compile wisdom literature, and sometimes it was in this story fashion. So you'll see the story of Job, or even the Jews sometimes organized the book of Esther there, where you would see the story of Esther and the wisdom that is taken out of that book as told in story form. And so Proverbs is just an aspect of wisdom literature. It's not entirely wisdom literature, but just one small part of it. All right, authorship. Most people should know this. Who wrote the book of Proverbs? Everyone says Solomon. Okay, and we know this because he says it three different times within the book. Right off the bat, chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of King Solomon, the son of David. And also you see it in chapter 10, verse 1, and again in chapter 25, verse 1. But that's not entirely true. And what I mean by that is Solomon wrote most of Proverbs. There are, in fact, at least three other authors that are included within the book of Proverbs. When you go to chapter 22, verse 17, and chapter 24, verse 23, look over there for just a minute. Turn over there. Because most of the time you'll see the Proverbs of Solomon, the king of Israel, the Proverbs of Solomon. But then you get to chapter 22, and look at verse 17 there. What does it say there? It might not say it in your section, but you might have a written in heading above that section there. What does it say? Sayings of the wise, or words of the wise. Now look at chapter 24 and look at verse 23. Yeah, further, more sayings of the wise. In verse 23, there are also sayings of the wise. This apparently is not referring to Solomon the king. And for certain, when you get just a few chapters later, you have someone named Agur in chapter 30 who writes that chapter, and then someone named Lemuel, and he deals with royalty, and then later on in that section, the virtuous woman. Now, there's some debate as to who Lemuel is, and some scholars believe that it's actually a pet name for Solomon. There is some debate about that. It's not certain. But that would be interesting. If Lemuel was Solomon, then who was the virtuous woman describing in chapter 31 of Proverbs? Bathsheba. It would have been describing Bathsheba, which is really, really interesting if that's actually the case. But we don't know for certain. I just thought I'd share that to make your brain hurt. All right. The book, this is what's really interesting. Most of the time when we think someone wrote something, that means that by the time they died, that of course it was in completion and circulating, and that's how the Jews had it. The book of Proverbs was not complete until long after Solomon's death. And there's going to be a couple of reasons for that. First of all, we understand that from what we read in chapter 25 in verse 1, where it says, "These also are the proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied." How much longer is King Hezekiah after King Solomon? I mean, that's quite a long ways. But there's a reason for that. Because when you read 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 32, we read that Solomon wrote 3,000 proverbs and 105 songs. All right? He's beat every band out there today, right? The Beatles have got nothing on Solomon. But Solomon is just a really interesting character because he was given a gift, if you remember. You go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 1, and Solomon is at the high places worshiping God, and God appears before Solomon, and he asks Solomon, he says, "I will give you anything that you ask." And what did Solomon ask of the Lord? He asked for wisdom. And as a result, God gave him not only wisdom, but he also gave him power and money and glory and everything else that's to go with that. Yeah, Clinton.
And he made Solomon like no one ever come before him or would ever come after him. So don't be going and tell me I got smarter person.
That's right. That's right. Solomon would be the wisest man that we would have known that has lived until this day. And the way that Solomon conveyed that wisdom was through his writing. And if you have someone who wrote down 3,000 proverbs, now that's not to say 3,000 chapters, okay? That's 3,000 proverbs, like the short sayings. But would it take a while to compile those and find where he'd written them all and organize them, etc.? And so you see that they're still doing that by the time of Hezekiah. So the book of Proverbs was not complete until several hundred years after Solomon had actually died. But just important to recognize, he's not the only one who contributed to this book. You also see it with the words of the wise, with Agur, and with King Lemuel. Okay, Proverbs is really unique and it's really different for several things, partially because of what it does not talk about. Nowhere in the Proverbs is it ever mentioned about Abraham or Isaac or Jacob. Nowhere does it ever mention the covenant with Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. You don't read about the Exodus. You don't read about Moses. You don't read about the law. And that's really different because when you open up to the Psalms, what do you read in the Psalms? Yeah. Some of them are just songs that are trying to illustrate those events and what's taken place. Yeah. And so Proverbs don't deal with those historical aspects. They are not used to illustrate history. It's used to illustrate general truth, wisdom. And so the Psalms, all of Solomon's songs that he wrote, you will see those aspects, but you don't see these things in the Proverbs. And here's another thing that is really interesting. You open up the Psalms, is it very clear that there are Jews and God's people and then those that are not God's people when you read the Psalms? I mean, all the time you'll see, "God, deliver me from my enemies." And they'll list who they are and go through it. You never see mention of Jews or Gentiles in the Proverbs or in Ecclesiastes and wisdom literature. You see man referred to as equal or as fellow man, and part of that is going to be, again, from looking through the lens, the perspective that we're given through the Proverbs, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and it's the beginning of wisdom, and it does not matter whether you're a Jew or whether you're a Gentile. If you want wisdom, the only way you're going to get it is through the fear of the Lord. So Solomon puts everyone on the same playing field, the same playing ground. You don't see any mention of Jew or Gentile. The Proverbs are unique because they teach us to learn from literally anything. If you're going to pick an animal that you could learn from, what would be the things that you would normally pick as a good teacher or good illustration? What's that? Okay, maybe a dog, maybe a goose, maybe an eagle. Go, if you're going to talk to a sluggard, how does Solomon write it? And then Agur. He says, go to the ant. Okay. How am I going to learn a lesson from the ant? Or how am I going to learn a lesson from the eagle in the sky, or the snake on the rock, or a ship on the ocean? You see all of these different things, or a man with a young woman. And we already discussed this, but what's really interesting is there is no distinction between secular and religious wisdom literature in the ancient Near Eastern texts. All literature at that time period that was attributed to wisdom or wisdom literature was always attributed to God or the gods. Even if they denied Jehovah, they still attributed wisdom to coming from whatever gods that they served. And what's interesting about that is because of that, you're going to see similarities between what Proverbs says, what Solomon wrote, and what other people wrote. There is a certain individual in Egypt named Amenemope. I just try to remember Amenemope. Amenemope, there you go. And actually, what's written between chapters 22 and chapters 24 are very strikingly similar to what this individual in Egypt wrote regarding wisdom literature. There might be a reason for that. When Solomon was alive, what happened quite often? He had lots of visitors, people that would come and would listen to his wisdom and to him speak, and then they would take what he said and take it back home. And this is actually evidence for what you read about in the scripture speaking of Solomon's great wisdom, because there are going to be elements that are almost verbatim between what you read in this later manuscript and what we understand were compiled in the Proverbs. Really interesting. Some more unique features. This is what we need to remember more than anything else. Everywhere you look in Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is going to undergird everything. If it's knowledge, it's based in the fear of the Lord. If it's the hatred of evil, it's based in the fear of the Lord, as said in chapter 7. Or is it in chapter 8? It's chapter 8, verse 13. If it's wisdom, chapter 9, verse 10, it's based in the fear of the Lord. Even later on, after the break from chapters 1 through 9, you're going to see that theme continued throughout the rest of Proverbs, and you're going to see other elements as well. Because wisdom comes from God, and because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom, the Proverbs also depict God as the sovereign one who is in control of all things. If knowledge and wisdom come from God, and if God is sovereign and is over all things, then what you end up understanding is that all truth comes from Him, and you cannot then understand how to properly deal with any situation without understanding how God would have you to do it. That's why Ecclesiastes makes so much sense, because Solomon tries to take God out of the picture, and what's the conclusion he comes to about everything? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Here is what the conclusion of the matter is. Fear God and keep His commandments. The only way everything makes sense is through the lens of understanding that God is in control, that He is the author of all truth, that He is the one who is the giver of knowledge and wisdom. And therefore, if you want to be wise, if you want to know something, the only way to truly have knowledge and to truly have wisdom without becoming a fool is through the knowledge of who? Of God. Now, what Jack has just been speaking about the last couple weeks, knowing God, this is basically the theme throughout wisdom literature. If you want to really know wisdom, if you want to have knowledge, if you want to have insight, the only way you're going to understand how to do that is through the knowledge of God. Because when you know God, that is when you will know knowledge, that is when you will know wisdom, and that's why you see things like the prophets when Jeremiah writes, "Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom." Well, wait a second, I thought wisdom's a good thing. not if it is gained outside of the fear of the Lord. Because he's going to go on to say, let not the mighty man boast in his might or the rich man boast in his riches, but let he who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me. And that I am my God who practices righteousness and justice and loving kindness. And in these things I delight, declares the Lord. When you know God, you will then walk in these ways according to true knowledge and according to true wisdom, and it will keep you from becoming the fool. That is the entire point of the book of Proverbs, is don't be the fool, but instead be wise through the fear of the Lord and through the knowledge of God. Any thoughts or questions about that before we move on? I saw a couple, like, maybe I want to give some hands. Okay. All right. On that note, there are going to be some instances where there are these what we call better than proverbs, and they do imply that sometimes the wicked are going to prosper. And you even see that in the Psalms. My enemy about me is bountiful, and I fall, and they laugh at my calamity and all these different things, and it's this cry out to God. But here's the thing. Remember in Ecclesiastes, there's this great equalizer for the rich man and the poor man. And what is that great equalizer? Death. And at the end of life, this is not a parable. This was a story that Jesus tells. And you know that historically because names are used. You had the rich man who went to torment, and then the poor man, Lazarus. And where did he go? Up to paradise. But he did not go there because he was poor. Why did he go there? Because he feared God, because he was righteous. And what Proverbs is going to illustrate is that there is something better than prospering in this life, and that is prospering in the next. It's righteousness. For the first time, really, you are going to see literature talking about the life after the next. And there's some speculation about what the Jews believed about that before the teachings of Christ. But what you see here is when you look at chapter 12, verse 28, look there just for a moment in Proverbs, chapter 12, verse 28. This is one of those passages that has a lot of scholars in debate as to what it means. Verse 28 says, "In the path of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death." Now, if that meant physically, can this be a general truth? That in the path of righteousness, if you're righteous, you're never going to die. That's not what this is talking about. The Proverbs are talking about a spiritual reality here, a spiritual truth. That those who are righteous, those who walk among that pathway, are going to find life, and they are never going to die. And so really the Proverbs in several places is going to point to an afterlife. And in reading these things, it should have prepared the Jew for understanding the ministry of Jesus Christ and what he would later discuss and talk about in regards to the righteousness that comes from him. Yeah, John. Mm-hmm. Why seek the living among the dead was the thought of the angel as well. Good, good. All right. We're going to skip over this very quickly just because of the sake of time. But a lot of times people will say, well, if the Proverbs are just general truths, are they authoritative? Can you use them? Are they binding to us? Well, you have to understand them within their context, but understand that the apostles alluded to the Proverbs all the time. And they used them as aspects of teaching in their ministry quite often. Peter is the primary individual who uses the Proverbs. He quotes Proverbs 3, verse 34 in his first epistle in chapter 5. He quotes Proverbs 10, 12 in his first epistle in chapter 4. And he quotes Proverbs 26:11, his second epistle in chapter 2. You see it in the book of Hebrews. You see it from James. But this book in and of itself is used and is written about from the apostles in their teaching, in their ministry. And so we understand Proverbs is absolutely authoritative as far as teaching and learning from it. Now, let's talk about the outline of Proverbs. This is going to be more Jack's territory because he's going to take off after chapter 9. We're going to try to outline and go through chapters 1 through 9 in the next 2 weeks. Whether we get there or not, I have no idea because there's just way too much to get through. We're just not going to be able to cover it all. But chapters 1 through 9 are different from the rest of the book, and it's a didactic discourse as opposed to what we're going to see later on. And what that is Solomon is writing specifically to his children. When you go to chapter 1 of Proverbs, go ahead and start off there, all the way in the beginning. After it says the Proverbs of Solomon, and it goes through the prologue, verse 8, who is it addressed to in verse 8 of chapter 1? Hear my son. Verse 10, what do you see again? Hear my son. Chapter 2, verse 1, my son, if you receive my words. Chapter 3, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teachings. Chapter 4, verse 1, hear, O sons, a father's instruction. Chapter 5, verse 1, my son. Again, in chapter 4, verse 10 and verse 20, my son, my son. Chapter 6, verse 1, my son. Chapter 5, verse 7, my son. You get the idea who this is written to. Solomon is writing to young people, specifically to his children. And he's addressing his sons in chapters 1 through 9. And they're going to stress several different themes. And it's going to, if you ever want someone to speak at a youth lectureship, or if you want to know what youth need to hear, these things right here are timeless lessons that young people need to hear. If Solomon, the most wise man in the world, thought these are the things that young men need to hear, then I would guarantee you these are things that young men need to hear today. And what he's going to talk about is listen to my instruction. How many of you guys have ever had those kids that they were perfect? They listened to everything you ever said. I was perfect. Yeah, right. Children don't listen to their parents. We think we know everything. Someone's pointing at Joyce. She thought she had. You got a perfect son. Is Paul perfect? That's right. Yeah. But that's going to be a continued theme that you see throughout this section, chapters 1 through 9, of listening to instruction. You're going to see this theme of pursuing after wisdom. And when we mean pursue, Solomon's going to write about it this way. Seek after it like you are seeking after gold. Or like you were seeking after silver. You know, young people have their dreams, they have their aspirations, and it's what they set their mind on, it's what they focus their time on. You know, some young people, it's a sport, and you just know it by seeing them. You know exactly what they do, what they pursue, what they're into. Solomon says, take that same vigor, that same vigilance, and you put that towards pursuing after wisdom. You're going to see a constant theme of avoiding evil companionship. Paul writes later on, do not be deceived, evil companions. How many times do good kids with honest intentions end up in the wrong crowd and doing things they never would have done if they hadn't have been amongst that group? It happens so far, or so often, and it happened back then. And Solomon says this is what they need to hear. And then men, especially, you're going to see this over and over again. Avoid the immoral woman. The idea of sexual temptation was spoken about by Solomon over and over and over again. And if you have a young man that's struggling, especially with that type of an issue, really, chapters 1 through 9 are some of the very best things that you can take a young person through, especially Proverbs chapter 4. I want to spend some time on that in the next week or two, just that chapter. because it is so powerful what Solomon writes and how applicable it is still today. Finally, this section is going to be bookended by this concept that Blake brought up already. Chapter 1, verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, the way that Hebrew literature worked is you would say one thing, and then you would say the same message in a different way. They would be parallel to one another. So a fool who despises wisdom and instruction is the same idea of saying that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So, Joyce, you were right on track earlier when you said to understand what wisdom is, you also have to understand what being a fool is. And Solomon makes that note right off the bat, that the opposite of the fear of the Lord and knowledge is being the fool who despises wisdom and instruction, who will not hear anything you have to say. And then you look at chapter 9, verse 10, and then we're going to have to be done after this. We'll get to the prologue next time. Look at verse 10 of chapter 9. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight." There's that parallel there. Knowing God is the only way to truly have knowledge or wisdom or discernment or instruction, because any other kind of wisdom, you know, that we would call it, is not even wisdom. And they understood that then. That's why all ancient Near Eastern literature that was wisdom literature was attributed from God or the gods, because if it's not, it's not wisdom. And today, you look at the, or back then, you look at the Greek culture, and you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1, God has made the wisdom of the world, it's the foolishness of God. There is no wisdom apart from God. If you want to know wisdom, if you want to know knowledge, the only way you're going to have that is through knowing the Lord. We're going to get to this the next time. The rest of Proverbs are outlined differently, chapters 10 all the way through 31. And then we'll get to the prologue next time, but we are out of time. So thank you so much.